And to say too, what I appreciate about your last book and it followed into this book, which I'm always happy to see, is the other side laid out and laid out using kind of their definitions, their terms, but then interacting with it in a positive light. In fact, many of the five theodicies that you list, I'm sorry, the six here. You talk about positives that they have, and you kind of incorporate into your answer for the theodicy.
Yeah, I thought that was that was one of the things that we observed really quickly in the book. It seemed like you were really fair with the other side in terms of making sure that you clearly explain where they were coming from, why they held the positions that they held, and so that was. And so you could really understand where the folks who you definitely disagree with, but, you know, where their good points were and that sort of thing. So that we really appreciated that when we were going through this book. That was really helpful.
Yeah. Rarely in these debates do you find someone embracing something so painfully false that it's just, you know, that there's nothing of value to learn. I think there's so many valuable points that free will theists make, and it's important to understand where some of those strong points are. There is a sense in which we have to have some concept of freedom, of will, because we recognize that we make decisions willfully, right? Whether they be sinful decisions or whether they be godly decisions, depending on the situation and the person, in terms of whether or not they're regenerate or unregenerate as Christians or non-Christians, and what stands behind those choices. You know, for example, free will theists will accuse Calvinists, of a brand of choosing of free will, if you want to call it that, that involves coercion. Well, that'd be a serious charge if that were true. And, if God determining our choices was a matter of coercion, I think the free will theists would be correct and saying that our freedom of choice and our moral responsibility has been rendered mute. If coercion were involved, we know from experience that if somebody is forced to do something against their will with a gun pointed to their head, you know, to do something evil, you know, that they're not morally responsible for that. So part of the charge of free will theists towards Calvinists is that your brand of free will involves coercion, you know, because you could do no other. Right. And so they assume that means coercion. So the task of the Calvinists is to say, no, that's not coercion. So it's important to listen to both sides of the argument because they do make good points, but do they misrepresent each other? And so, you know, you always have to do your best effort to represent the opposition the way that they themselves would argue and then look for the weaknesses in their arguments.
Yeah. So Patrick's has already pointed out, and I think you do it in your book, with this issue of God and love and the Trinity, is there any other arguments against this free will defense that you think are really, you know, causes it not to work, I guess, for a good theodicy?
Well, yeah, there's a number of reasons why I think the libertarian brand of free will is not coherent. From a scriptural standpoint, I believe it's not coherent because the Bible makes it very clear that God is sovereign over all of history and that he has determined everything that takes place in the course of history. And I seek through several chapters to demonstrate that. And I believe that he is sovereign over both good and evil, and that evil, in fact, serves God's purposes, and that if something evil were to occur in a world that God might plan or ordain that did not serve some purpose that God had some good or greater purpose, then if that evil had not occurred, then he certainly would not have ordained it to happen. And we know of cases in which God has said, you know, certain amount of evil will be allowed in his plan. And then beyond that, no. A good example of that would be the great flood in Genesis. You know, the world had become so evil that God had determined that this is not going to continue this way. And so he designed, you know, Noah and the flood to wipe out the world and to start over. And we have many examples of that kind of thing. Nonetheless, the point is that the Bible is very clear about God's sovereignty over both good and evil. What the Bible is less clear about is some fine-tuned definition of free will. And so I think it's important to not overstate the case. And I bring this out in my previous book, What About Free Will, that the Bible does not give us some clear definition of free will. But it certainly doesn't embrace the libertarian view of free will. I believe it's far more supportive of what is called the compatibilist view of free will, that our free choices are compatible with God's meticulous sovereignty. And so I think that would be an argument against free will, and probably a most powerful argument in my mind. Another very powerful argument against free will is the doctrine of foreknowledge. You know, both Arminians and Calvinists agree that God knows every future event in history exhaustively. And therefore, it's not possible for something that God does not foreknow to happen contrary to what he already knows. And yet, that's part of the definition of free will from Arminians and other free will theists, is that, you know, at the moment of choosing, you could always go in opposite directions. And if that's the case, you could never know beforehand what those choices might be.
Right. There goes the prophecy.
It's a huge problem for Arminians and other free will theists. And they have turned themselves, I believe they've turned themselves in all kinds of knots and circles trying to answer that question, and have done so in a very unsatisfactory way. The fact of the matter is that God knows that you're going to wake up tomorrow morning and drink, you know, a cup of Folgers coffee at 9:03 a.m. Is it possible for you at 9:03 a.m. to fool God and drink a glass of lemonade instead? If that's the case, then you have eviscerated God's omniscience. And that is one of the attributes of God that we cannot deny. Mm. And so, yes, problem of foreknowledge is a very big problem.
Mm. I think on the opposite end of the spectrum, it still doesn't let the Molinist or the provisionist kind of get away from that nomenclature of author of evil, because God still actualizes a universe in which, you know, and it's always the rape of a child, or it's always something very, very strong, emotional that they put forward. It's always actualized in a world where X evil happens. And so God is authoring a world in which those things he knows to happen. So it almost maybe takes a step backwards and looks at the point of creation. But from there, God can't do otherwise, because then he would be interfering. And so it seems to be the point against Calvinism seems to still work against them for their point of view too.
Yeah, you can't escape these problems. You know, for example, for the open theists, you know, the open theists, I think, has the most consistent view of free will, because basically they deny that God has any foreknowledge of future events. Now, God can know with great accuracy what future events might be, but he can't know with absolute certainty what those events might be. Mm-hmm. They would say that God has exhaustive pre-knowledge, you know, of everything in the past up to the present, and he can use that knowledge to predict the future. And he's really good at predicting the future.
Right.
And that's how they treat prophecy. But he doesn't know exhaustively what the future holds. He can't know with any certainty, with 100% absolute certainty what any future event holds. Nonetheless, let's consider the case of a serial rapist or a serial murderer. The open theist God may not know that this guy's going to commit murder, but after the second or third murder, he knows what this guy's probably going to do. Why doesn't he stop him at that point? Mm-hmm. God does, the open theist agrees that God has the sovereign power to intervene. Now, of course, the same is true of the Arminian. If the Arminian knows, if the Arminian God knows that this serial rapist is going to continue to rape these, 30 odd women or whatever, why doesn't he intervene and stop? So they end up with the same type of problems that they accuse the Calvinists of having because of the foreknowledge issue. And the Molinist just ties himself in circles with the same thing. So the bottom line is that you have to have a much more robust understanding of God's relationship to evil than any of those viewpoints provide us. And even many Calvinists shy away from the kind of theodicy that I present in my book, because it seems absolutely audacious to say that God has some kind of greater good that would come out of evil. And so many Calvinists are very reluctant to go down that path. But the fact is that that's the only other viable position that you would have to hold to if you reject these other positions.